I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are really prestigious, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird?
So, Jonah, I'm really excited about our guest today. Some might say I'm kind of obsessed with her. I've been listening to her podcasts. Well, I guess, Jonah, for our story, do you want to hear how I first heard about her?
Sure.
It sounds like you really do.
No, I really do. I honestly really do.
Okay. When I was living in New York, I started watching Westworld, and I was like, what the hell is going on? I knew I liked it, but I did not understand what was going on. So I was like, I need to listen to a podcast every week and have somebody break it down for me. So I started listening to this podcast that Joanna, our guest today, did called Decoding Westworld with her co-host David Chen. And I enjoyed it so much, like separate from it even being about the show, that I would just make time for it every week. I would walk along the Hudson River, listen to it. And the thing that I found to be so incredible about it is, as someone who watches so much TV, I've never heard someone be so good at watching TV and at understanding it. And she was predicting stuff about Westworld that her co-host and people, listeners would be like, there's no way. And she was basically always right, to the point where I remember her listeners getting mad at her because they thought she knew spoilers and she was saying them, and she didn't. So I don't know how much longer we can wait until we introduce her. Our guest today is a podcaster and cultural critic for The Ringer, appearing on several shows, including The Ringerverse, Trial by Content, The Prestige TV Feed, and more. She was a senior writer at Vanity Fair from 2014 to 2021, and also founded and co-hosted both The Storm of Spoilers and A Cast of Kings podcast, as well as Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast, and has been a host on so many TV-related podcasts, including my favorite, The Boiler Room podcast, which she co-hosted with Kristen Russo. Please welcome the woman that sci-fi dubbed the queen of Game of Thrones, Joanna Robinson.
Hello. Wow. What an intro. Vanessa, I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to meet you, Jonah. And I'm so happy to be here because Vanessa and I have been like in loose, light, loving contact for years and years and years and years. So to finally get to like actually have a chat with you is so nice.
Yes.
I'm so thrilled.
And Vanessa, I will attest, does watch so much TV. So this really is like big for her, I think.
First of all, okay, I just want to get into, you do a lot of podcasts where you really get into TV and sort of what's going on. You often know kind of like cultural, when things are taken from Shakespeare, when things are, it's every podcast you're on, and this is no burn to the people you do them with. Everyone is always like, what is Joanne? Like it, everyone knows that you know more than them. I guess that's what I'll say. That's not a burn to the people you do. And I haven't listened to every podcast that you've done. So maybe there's one or two of you out there who've done a podcast with Joanna, but I don't. Anyway, the point is, you're so incredible at knowing what's going on. And I'm just wondering, I guess, just to get it started, like, Did you just watch a ton of TV as a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think that's a perfect thing to talk about on this very podcast. Yes. A show that I've listened to and quite enjoy is like, yeah, I was a hardcore Latchkey kid. And, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s and was, you know, both my parents worked and I had an older sister and I just watched a ton of television growing up all the time. And, you know, to the point where I think my parents were like, like, you know, should we have let our TV raise our child? But, you know, like when I look around, I'm like, I get to talk about television for a living. Like, that's what I do literally all day long. So all those years I was raised by television was really just homework for what I do now. I mean, I would definitely push back on your delightful compliment of I know more than my co-hosts do. But I think in terms of just the sheer like hours that I put in front of the television. I think that is helpful for, you know, literacy or understanding anyone who watches a ton of television or watches a bunch of movies or reads a lot of books. You get to a point where it's hard for a show or a movie or a book to surprise you because you've read so many versions of this plot before. And so when something can surprise you, you're even more delighted. But I think for that, you mentioned Westworld season one. I was kind of as surprised as anyone that that wound up being, I was right about that. And then I was wrong about Westworld for like years to come. So I just want to like knock myself off the pedestal and say, I can definitely be wrong plenty of times. So, yeah.
Well, do you watch, because one thing, and Vanessa, I hope this isn't embarrassing to you, but Vanessa watches a lot of stuff almost ironically, it feels like Lifetime stuff, or like she'll be like, look how bad the acting in this is. I'm going to watch a lot of it. Like, do you have sort of like guilty pleasures that
Jonah,
aren't maybe
I feel
as,
like you do that.
Well, I guess I do that too. Maybe I'm sort of projecting.
I think you're kind of projecting onto me.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious, like, because
my friend does this thing I want to ask you about.
Asking for my sister.
Do you watch stuff sort of non-critically that sort of, or are you always kind of engaged intellectually, I guess?
I am constantly trying to find things that I'm, because I do this for my job, because I talk about books for my job, because I talk about film for my job. Those three things that have in my life been such a pleasurable, like, escape from whatever, now I am constantly, I'm churning on them. And so to your point, I think what I end up doing is not so much let me watch this thing on Lifetime and how bad the acting is, though I've watched plenty of that and I'm not knocking it. But I will watch older shows, comfort shows that probably no one wants my opinion. Like, no one needs my opinion on Frasier, so I can just watch Frasier and nobody needs to hear what I think about it.
Yes, yeah.
That is one of the greatest shows of all time, in case you guys want to talk about Frasier. But, you know, like, stuff like that, where it's just sort of like trying to find something where no one could possibly want to know what I think about this. Yeah.
What are some of your other kind of comfort shows, I guess?
Yeah.
From, like, your childhood, maybe?
That's a great question. Well, for my childhood.
Or just in general, I guess.
It's so funny because like anytime I think a show is a comfort show, and then oftentimes someone will like rope me into some sort of rewatch or conversation about it. Like
happened with my so-called life and led to one of my favorite podcasts of all time.
Exactly.
The Boiler Room, which I mentioned before. That's what that's about.
Shout out to Kristen Russo.
Yeah.
Kristen Russo, the best, right? You guys know her. Like she, that's her, one of her favorite shows of all time. And so she was just like, Joanna, do you want to do this with me just as like a friendship experiment? And yeah, then my so-called life changes from a show that I comfort rewatched to something that I was actively analyzing. Goes into the other bucket, you know what I mean? But I'm happy to have that because then I have this, I didn't like study television in school or anything like that. I didn't do like a media studies degree or anything like that. I did like a film studies minor, but very minor.
Yeah.
And so I feel like the act of studying a show for a podcast is my best education that I can do. Okay, but you asked me comfort shows from my childhood. That was a great stall and did my back half of my brain come up with answers while I was talking. I mean, I guess if I can get my hands on it, like something really fun and dumb, like Saved by the Bell.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah, totally. Which,
is that the inspiration? What is the inspiration for your podcast art?
Yes.
Is it definitely Saved by the Bell? And our theme song as well.
Yeah. One that I used to love watching that I still think really holds up a lot is Blossom.
Yes, absolutely.
That was such a funny show. Yeah. And we've talked here about that seemed like an exception to this, but that a lot of the shows when we were younger were, you know, Empty Nest were sort of for adults. So it was like we had sort of like a different There weren't as many like shows kind of for us as kids.
Yeah. I mean, I was really into like Wings.
Oh,
as a kid, you know, it's like, why was I really into Wings? But I was. Great show.
Yeah.
Major Dad. Like, I think they played both of those like back to back on USA reruns. So I was just watching.
So many USA. You know? We were watching so many USA reruns.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, it wasn't aimed at us. It wasn't aimed at kids.
Right.
Yeah. So you grew up thinking you understood what it was like to be an adult through the lens of Perfect Strangers or whatever the case may
be.
So.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, I feel like we all learned about blended families through Step by Step.
Yeah.
I mean, really, those dynamics.
A friend of mine, I have this one friend from, I've known him since like fifth grade, and sometimes we just get on the phone and talk about various eras of the TGIF lineup. Like what was all on the roster at this time and that, you know, and like, what are the obscure one season TGIF shows, et cetera. But like TGIF Fridays, and for people who listen, you don't know, it was like a block of four shows on Friday evenings that ABC would put out. And it was just like an event, you know?
Do you know off the top of your head, the original four shows?
Oh my God. I know that my friend would know this and he would be like yelling.
Was Full House on it?
I feel like Full House was, like everyone thinks Full House was, but I feel like Full House
probably
was like,
had its own night.
I feel like Full House was like later, like was on the block for at one point.
Okay.
But like Perfect Strangers was definitely an early
one. I know Perfect
one.
Strangers. I know Family Matters.
Yeah.
For a period of time, Dinosaurs, of course.
Dinosaurs. Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Yes.
Oh. I'm looking
at Sister, Sister, Boy Meets World, Clueless, Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Okay.
I don't remember Clueless being a TV show.
It was,
very brief.
Okay.
Very brief.
It had Rachel Blanchard was the Alicia Silverstone.
Okay.
The Alicia Silverstone role. But it was so confusing because it had like some of the movie cast was in it, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like Donald Faison, I think, was in it.
Donald Faison, I think, was in it. What's her name? Who played Dion, I think, was in it.
Oh, Stacey Dash?
Maybe she wasn't. Maybe Stacey Dash wasn't in it. I think the redhead and Donald Faison.
No, Stacey Dash was on it.
She was.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So they're like, we got some of the movie cast, but don't worry.
It's tough.
Don't worry that Alicia's not here. It's fine.
Oh, my gosh.
We recently had an episode where we talked about General Hospital and how they're recast in left and right. And the audience is just, you know, in general, I mean, I think the new actors get a lot of hate mail and stuff, but I think in general, the audience accepts it, you know, and moves on. Whereas we were really forced into that with the Clueless show in a way that was unexpected for a sitcom kind of a show.
And frankly, like shocking. No, I love that you brought up General Hospital. Can I tell you my relationship with General Hospital?
Yes, because I watch it still.
Oh my God, I love that. Is there anyone who's like still on it from like back in the day?
Everybody.
Okay.
Like
amazing.
Luke quote unquote died, but I kind of think they're like, they talk about him a lot because they think he got murdered. So
he
it feels like he's
cryogenically frozen or something.
Jonah just learned we had this wonderful actress, Eden McCoy, on who plays Jocelyn, who wasn't Jocelyn character didn't exist probably when you watched it if you haven't. But we were talking about how, like, you know, the weather machine that controls the weather and how people get brought back from the dead all the time and how people put masks on of other people and it doesn't matter what their body type is.
Yes.
They still look exactly like the other person and have their body type just from a mask on their face. And so Jonah was like really shocked because he was like, oh, I thought this was just about like romances and stuff. But it's turns out it's about a lot of science and stuff too.
Yeah, it has. It's a hardcore science show. Not as much of a medical show as you would guess, given that it's called General Hospital. But like, the meteorology comes into it.
Yeah,
like that.
Hospital / science lab.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you watch reality TV at all?
I don't. It's like my one.
You probably don't have time.
Well, I mean, I also don't watch sports. You know, a couple years ago, I went from Vanity Fair to The Ringer. The Ringer is like predominantly it's like sports and pop culture, but like started anchored in sports. They tried to hire me for a couple of years. I was like, I don't know anything about sports. You guys don't want me.
Yeah.
Like I will not get any of your references. You guys don't want me. And they were like, no, we want you. We like very nice. And it's been fine. It's been great. But I don't understand how my colleagues who keep up with a lot of the film and television that I watch also watch all the sports. Like, how do you do that? You know what I mean? But yeah, I have a few reality exceptions. Like, Bake Off, like the Great British Bake Off. But again,
okay,
I preferred that before everyone in America found out about it. Yeah, and then when everyone did, I was like, you know, and then like, you know, like the cast changed and I was like, it's not what it was when it was just like some of us bootlegging it from the UK. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, hopefully no one's turned off this podcast because I sound like an absolute snob.
No, you sound like just intelligent. Angel. But, don't worry about it.
But do you know what I mean? That like it's fun to love something that like other people love, but it's not always fun to love the thing that every single person's talking about, because then it's like every opinion becomes so fraught. And I love you know what is called the monoculture. Like I loved it. We're not talking about, we support the unions and we're not talking about current film and television on this podcast because we very much support the unions. But if, say, there were some big monocultural thing going on while we're recording this in terms of film, I think it is fun that everyone's watching the same thing.
Right.
But it also,
you
know, that is extremely fun. But do I care what, say, for example, theoretically, Ben Shapiro has to say about any of it? No. And if it's like not as popular, then Ben Shapiro knows he doesn't get any clicks, and then I don't have to like
and then you
catch
don't have to deal. That's true. That's true. You don't have, it's like when things are smaller, you just don't have to deal with all the like huge opinions and
bad faith
people,
takes.
Bad faith like, takes.
All of that.
Totally.
Yeah, I feel that way a lot. And we can get into it probably in our next segment, but a lot about music. Like, I, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Because, yeah, I come from kind of like the, whatever. Yeah, I've worked a lot of like kind of punk, emo, alternative magazines. Yeah. And that's been my career. And so, yeah, I feel like I always champion like one of the more indie DIY. And when bands get too popular, sometimes it can be, bring up, you know, a lot of issues up. And I was thinking about The Ringer, is, you know, who also was involved in that world a lot was Andy Greenwald. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Andy wrote one of probably like the first book about emo.
Yeah, because he was a music journalist before he was a TV critic, before he was a TV creator. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, and he wrote one of the first books. But I do think that's a big common thing with, and there are a lot of, I listen to a lot of music podcasts too, or even band-specific podcasts where like a podcast will go through every song by a band.
Yeah.
Like each episode will be a song.
Yeah, there's a show like that on The Ringer. There's also, like, I think it's, they changed the number a couple times, so I don't want to get it wrong, but I want to say 60 Songs to Explain the 90s was a great music podcast on our network.
Rob, he's been on the he's been on our podcast
Rob
too.
Arbiola,
he's a fellow Clevelander.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Incredible.
Well, on this incredible note, we're going to take a little break and we'll be right back with Joanna Robinson.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Joanna, have you ever been to Cleveland? Have you spent any time there? That seems to be a big theme on our podcast in general.
No, should I go to Cleveland?
You should go. Yes.
Okay. Vanessa, I don't know. Gave a conflicted face.
Well, I think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is incredible. You could have lunch with our parents.
I would love that. Where would we go?
Probably Taza, which is the same owners as this place. Well, maybe you'd go to Tommy's. That's my favorite restaurant. That's where I hope you'd go.
What's Taza? I never heard of it.
Taza, Jonah. I don't know if you've been there.
It sounds too fancy for me.
No, Jonah. It's the owners of Aladdin's.
Okay.
But it's sort of more of a like, it's like an Eaton Collection.
Gotcha.
And you can get, you know, the same kind of classic Aladdin's fare, but in sort of a different... Joanna, are you having the time of your life listening to us talk about this?
A restaurant you will never go to.
I'm just sitting here trying to like reverse engineer, figure out what classic Aladdin's fare is.
I would say hummus, falafel.
Okay. That's what I was envisioning.
Yeah. What you're thinking.
It's this chain of restaurants in Cleveland that they also have in some other Midwestern states, including Illinois. Did you know that, Jonah?
I didn't know that. Yeah. I want to ask one more TV question.
Okay, so you don't want to ask a question about Aladdin's?
Or Taza? It's classier spinoff restaurant.
What are the soups available at Taza, Vanessa? No, Joanna, like, I'm curious, like, because I feel like a lot of times I watch movies and at the end I'm like, I don't get the ending. Mm-hmm. Like, and then I have to listen to a podcast or like read about it and then I still, like... Do you ever not understand something, or do you sort of like understand conceptually what they're trying to do, but like it doesn't work to the point where you're like, are you second guessing yourself? Like, do you ever not kind of comprehend things?
Yeah,
I guess.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Like to hear Vanessa tell it, I know everything. But
yeah.
No,
it sounds like you don't even need to watch it. You sit down and like the first minute, you know the whole story and everything.
Okay. I'm a human being. I've definitely Googled, like, you know, because in SEO land, as like someone who used to, you know, churn out internet content, you know, the blah, blah, blah ending explained is like a really killer SEO headline that you can do for almost any movie.
Right.
And I did it for shamefully, because it's kind of a cheap ploy, but I did it for The Green Knight. That is a film that is like an ambiguous ending. And so the headline I put on it was like, blah, blah, blah's ending explained, but really it was just me talking to David Lowery about the whole thing.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, so stuff like that where you can like, or if you've read the book and you're like, I've read The Green Knight, or I've read This Is Where I Leave You, another like film that people were confused by. And I'm like, okay, well, if you read the book, it's, you know, a little clear this filmmaker is being intentionally sort of obtuse and artistic, and we love that. But like, if you want to know what they were going for, this is what it is.
Yeah. And do you also, okay, I know we said this is the last question, but when you're talking about shows on your podcast, I feel like you're generally pretty respectful of whatever show you're talking about. Do you ever feel pressure to like, because your podcasts are so popular, is it ever hard if you like didn't like an episode or something to not?
I think if you're asking, like, am I a shill? No, I mean, like, I think I think if there's something, there have been shows that I've done in the past where you lock into covering a season of television and maybe you're working with this is more what I did at VF, but you're like working with a publicity team and they're like hooking you up with talent to talk to and stuff like that. You do want to be very respectful because you're in a relationship and like you don't want to lie. And so I never lied on a podcast about how I felt about a show.
I can tell that about you. I guess I'm just saying, if you don't like something, do you just have to delicately?
So there's a couple options. One, you could just not cover it. And so I will say there was a recent show that is part of a big comic book franchise that literally just had its finale this week that was very disappointing. And despite the incredible talent that was involved, we covered the first two episodes and we just didn't, because we were just like, who wants to hear us talk about this thing that isn't very good for an hour and a half to two hours, good for you.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just like, nobody, that's not interesting podcasting. And I don't want to lie and say I liked it. I mean, I don't want to lie about anything. And so, but if there's something I feel a little bit more middle of the road about, what I will tend to do often is highlight what I like.
Yeah.
And then just say, I have some notes and here they are about the other things, you know?
Yeah. I think from my experience writing about music, I think the middle of the road stuff is the hardest stuff to write about. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you don't have as strong of an opinion. So
you do a great job of, I feel like it never feels, even if you can, even if I feel like you're not like, it's not your favorite thing or whatever, you do a good job of kind of being honest about things, but never feeling like you're like disparaging the thing.
Well, the other thing is, and you guys know this, like, in the world of music and in the world of like TV and film, there are so many people putting so much of their heart and soul. Like, just because the thing is
bad, so true,
doesn't mean very talented people didn't try very hard to make a good thing.
Yes,
and so to
absolutely.
Just kick dirt on it, is not. Like, what if they're listening? You know, like, I just imagine that it's someone I know and they're listening. And I'm like, I want to be honest about, you know, things that didn't work, or especially if I find something like offensive or problematic or something like that, I want to talk about it. But I don't want to pretend that, you know, there are so many ways something can go wrong.
Yes,
that have,
100%.
You know, I know you know this, that like have nothing to do with how talented the writer was in the first place, or how talented the director was, or how talented the actors were. You know, could be in the edit, could be in anything. You know, you just don't know where it was.
That's so such a good, regardless, it's so much work for so many people, put their hearts and souls into it. And you can't kick dirt at it, as you said.
I mean, you can, and sometimes if you see something that's very bad, it is enjoyable to read or listen to someone who is like incredibly cutting talk about it. I am too soft to do that. But some people are really good at it, you know?
Yeah. I think that also changes a little as you get older. I feel like when I was starting out writing, I was always trying to burn people
or
like be, I was, you know, more angry. And now I'm just like, if something, especially if something's not super mainstream, I'm like, I don't want to, like, what's the point?
Jonah, I've heard you talk about that before. It's funny because Jonah was writing for different music magazines and stuff since he was in college. And I've heard you say before, Jonah, that some of this stuff that you wrote, you look at it now and you're like, why was I being so hard?
It's not only that, interviews I would do, especially like in college with bands, I read them now sometimes, I stumble upon them and it's like, it feels so confrontational to me. I'm like, well, you guys say you're punk, but you said this, all this stuff. And I'm like, I can't believe I would, and people are so nice about it. I was like, I wouldn't even talk to me.
I used to work for a website that I love and adore and support, and they have changed their tone, but like snark was sort of their like hallmark. They prided themselves on their snark. And I was so like young and green and new and desperate to sound intelligent and sound cool and like whatever. And so if I read any of that stuff, I just hear she's so desperate to prove something. Yeah. That's all that's about, you know? So,
But I think you're figuring it out. You're starting out. And speaking about music.
Yes.
I wanted to bring up your topic, which is a great topic you brought in today, the Indigo Girls.
Yes.
And what is your relationship with the Indigo Girls like?
I'm so, like, I love the safe space that is this podcast where you can, like, who wants to listen to me talk about the Indigo Girls in 2023? Me. And also, I guess, willingly,
everybody.
You guys. I was in high school from like fall of 95 to spring of 99 was when I was in high school. And the Indigo Girls live album, 1200 Curfews, came out fall of my freshman year. And it was like sort of this defining album. There was a lot, of course, you know, way more about music than I do, but there was like a lot cooler, edgier stuff happening in those years, fertile years for very cool music. I would not say the Indigo Girls were cool, but I just like, I love them. And you know, I'm so delighted to be talking to siblings about this. I got them from my sister, my older sister, right?
Yeah.
Like, and the Indigo Girls, they had some great albums before that album. And so my sister listened to the Indigo Girls. I got a lot of my musical taste from her. And it was just a deeply pretty uncool thing to be really into. Like, not that they were popular, they went platinum. Like, it's not like they were some obscure thing, but it wasn't necessarily like cool as a young teen in the 90s to be like that into the Indigo Girls. And I just found a lot of comfort them. I really loved them. I was like, I wore Birkenstocks all through high school. Like, that was just like the biggest tragedy of my life is I never got to go to Lilith Fair, because I feel like the whole Lilith Fair thing was like completely my vibe and I just never got to go. And so, I don't know, there was a documentary about the Gnu Girls that debuted at Sundance this year, and it was at South By and Tribeca. Like, it hit all the festivals. I feel like they're having a year. One of their greatest songs, Closer to Fine, was recently featured in a film that we won't name because we're not talking about films because we support the unions. But it feels like they're having a bit of a moment this year.
And so I was
just like, I would love to talk about how wonderful they are and I am not a queer person. I'm a straight person, but a lot of my friends my whole life have been very queer. And so the way in which they like broke through a barrier in the 90s in terms of being out lesbians, the way that they put their activism so much into their music, like all of that was like tremendously important to me. But I also remember like the biggest band at my school, I think during that time, or at least during a couple of years, was Dave Matthews Band. That was so massive. And I remember one year, like I liked Dave okay, but I didn't like really care. And one year I won Dave tickets like randomly in a school raffle. And like every cool kid was like sidling up to me to be like, what are you going to do with those Dave tickets, Joanna? Like, you don't really like Dave. What are you going to do? And I gave them to this girl, Amy Verrier, because she was the nicest of the cool kids who sidled up to me. And like, I just didn't care. I just gave these Dave tickets away because I didn't care. But like, because I was not cool.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
In Northern California, the Bay Area. Yeah.
Okay.
Jonah took me to my first concert, which was Lilith Fair. He won tickets on the radio to it. And I ended up, for something else, going to it twice that summer. But Jonah had his first, we've talked about this on here, Jonah had his first cappuccino ever at Lilith Fair at a cappuccino machine. Jonah's 2 years older than me. So my big brother having his first cappuccino, taking me to my first concert.
Very sophisticated.
What year was this?
I graduated high school in 98. This was probably, I was still in high school. So yeah, maybe 96 or 97.
What an iconic 90s experience. Yeah. Your first cappuccino
at
Lilith Fair. Love it.
But I was never that into the Indigo Girls. I remember, it really makes sense to me that your older sister was, because I remember, I feel like my friends with older sisters were more into them. And I graduated in 2000. So we're kind of like the same. Jonah graduated in 98. So you're like,
I'm like in the middle of you guys.
In the middle of us.
Yeah.
I feel like somehow I was really into like Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan and stuff. And were you sort of like a Lilith Fair person, or you were just kind of like an Indigo Girls?
Well, I mean, like so this one Indigo Girls lyric keeps bumping in my head as I talk about how uncool I was in school. But because there's one lyric, I bought you that ring because I never was cool, which I love, is like one of my favorite, like this very like, I did this very emotionally awkward thing because I never was cool. And that's okay. In middle school, like before I went to high school, in middle school, I listened to like oldies music. Like I was really into like 60s music.
It's
just like what we grew up listening to. And then also musicals. We were like a big musicals household.
Yeah.
When I got to high school, I had this like sort of abrupt, like, it is not okay that you don't know anything about contemporary music sort of moment.
Right.
And my first CD I bought was Jagged Little Pill. So I was like into Alanis. And into like, you know, loosely into various other things. But I think because the Indigo Girls are so connected to like the '60s folk music that I was already really into.
Yeah, that makes
sense.
There
was like a straight line that I could draw to them that connected with my taste more. But yeah, I mean, like I wasn't into Tori. I wasn't into Sarah. I would listen to like alternative radio.
Yeah.
And that was like my education. And like when I listen to music now, a lot of times I just turn on like a 90s alternative like Spotify 100% playlist or whatever. And, like,
that's what I do too.
And I love all of that music.
Yeah.
And they don't put the Indigo Girls on those playlists because like, you know, and they didn't like really play them on the alternative radio station that I listened to. They were just like too folky, too queer, too like, you know, Southwest or whatever. It just like didn't go with the other alternative music that I did enjoy in high school. It wasn't as like emotionally connected to, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I never really, they weren't really on my radar. I had I worked at Kids R Us in high school.
Uh-huh.
And my boss at Kids R Us was really into the Indigo Girls and was always trying to learn. So yeah, I knew them through that. But yeah, they weren't really totally on my radar.
Yeah.
Until later. Now I think it's kind of cool. Like, you know, I think these bands that are like these kind of legacy bands have been able to like cultivate these careers over decades and put out new music and, you know, keep doing it. Like, I have a lot of respect, even if it's not necessarily something I'm into. I think that's, yeah, I think it's really, I think Pearl Jam obviously had a lot of commercial success, but they're another one of these bands where, like, they put out a new record and, like, their fans buy it and they can still, yeah. So there's, yeah.
Yeah, and I think also specifically 1200 Curfews, which was a two-disc live album that came out again, like my fall of my freshman year, was like a sort of de facto greatest hits because it was okay. Just like, you know, they had a bunch of songs from their various albums on there. And it's one of those, again, I'm not a music expert. I would not ever go toe-to-toe with you, Jonah, nor even probably Vanessa.
This is not but a like, competition.
No, I don't. And also, I don't know anything, so don't worry about it.
But but you know that feeling of a live album that you know by heart and you know the sound of the applause after every song and you know their like inter-song patter that they do on stage and stuff like that. That was the relationship. And I will say, one of my favorite memories musically was getting into, there's this girl, Sam Payne, who was like a couple years older than me, who like drove a, you know, gold Jeep Grand Cherokee and like was so rich and so beautiful and like all this other stuff and lived near me. So she gave me a ride home and she had the Indigo Girls in her car. And I was like, you listen to the Indigo Girls, but you are so cool. And she was just like, well, kind of like a like Our Secret sort of thing. And I was like, wow. So, you know, just like a thing, and those things you can share that are not quite in the mainstream.
Yes.
Sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, and I love the way that they're being celebrated now this year in like, you know, whether it's, you know, a huge glossy movie or a documentary that's hitting all the film festivals, like to look at their legacy, to look at how groundbreaking they were, to look at all the things that were up against them. Like if you watch that documentary, which I saw at South By, like it's quite, all the homophobia and all the misogyny is quite crushing when you sort of see it laid out in front of you. It's sort of similar to the reckoning that we have with certain things like Monica Lewinsky or Britney Spears in the last few years, where when you line up all the clips of the late night hosts or whatever the case may be, and you're just sort of like, oh, I laughed at all those jokes, or like, I thought all those headlines were cool, and like, I didn't even think about it. And when you put it all together, you're like, wow, what was in the water, you know, at the time that we just thought this was okay. And so the Indigo Girls are part of all of that. And I think it's interesting.
Absolutely. Did you ever get into like any punk stuff or that stuff during that era or at all?
Not during that time. I did date a guy like years later who was really into punk and gave me like a little mini punk education. That feels terrible to say. I dated a guy who taught me about punk music. mansplained punk to me, perhaps. But like, that, honestly, that's my closest access to punk. Okay. What were the best punk artists of your high school years?
Oh man. I mean, Vanessa would know because she was in my car a lot.
Well, that
usually
was
to school very late while Vanessa was like in honors classes and I was like, oh, whatever.
We would pull up to school and Jonah would be blasting NoFX or NoFX, Sex
Bad
Pistols
Religion,
or something.
Yeah. The Misfits. Yeah.
And I thought that
Operation
I
Ivy.
Thought that was cool. And I there's something I always thought of the Indigo Girls as being very cool because my friends with older sisters like them, but I just was more, I was more into other female vocalists kind of, but similarly, like it was funny growing up with Jonah because Jonah was always into this pretty hardcore music. And even though I wasn't into that music, I felt there was pressure on me to not be into like Mariah Carey or Britney Spears or anything. Or if I liked those things, which I did, I wanted to like impress Jonah. And so it felt like I genuinely really liked those female vocalists, but I also thought they could fit under the cool radar of like, they're not mainstream, whatever. But I'll also say what's also funny, and Jonah, I don't know if you know that, but I bet you had a sense that I was.
Well, I would view it more like punitive. Like I would walk in like with my JNCOs and stuff, be like, you're listening to Mariah Carey, you know?
So he was a part of it. But I remember one time going to a Dave Matthews Band concert with my friends because they had gotten like tickets for all of us. And I still remember being like, why am I going to this? And then I remember being at it and just, and this is no burn to Dave Matthews Band. I know people genuinely really love them. But it is so interesting that that was the band that just, right?
Yes, definitely. And I feel like that whole like era of jam bands were like the cool kids were into like even like Rusted Root, Dave Matthews Band, Phish. Like those were like kind of the cool bands to like. And it's weird to think now because there were pop artists and stuff. But now
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot of like rock bands or like jammy bands that are like the quote unquote mainstream popular bands. But that's totally how it was in the late 90s.
Well, I only recently realized, like honestly, with the last couple of years, that Dave is essentially a jam band. Like I didn't even put it in the same.
I thought of them that
but,
way.
But
yeah.
They are.
I don't
absolutely.
Think I thought of that until just you said that just now.
Yeah.
But like, you're right.
They absolutely
yeah.
are. And I think I didn't even like learn the term jam band until my like early 20s. And I lived with a guy who listened to OAR and I was like, what is this?
Oh, yeah. See, this is like what like the antithesis of what I liked that and I yeah. was very as we said I was very opinionated back yeah. then so you would not want to be in this discussion with me 20 years ago. It would be horrible.
I was gonna say the other one that I remember came to my college freshman year was Guster.
Oh. Oof. Yeah,
just the name alone. I don't remember any of their songs, but I remember people being like, Guster's here, and I was like, what?
Guster was such a thing, and then it's like they don't exist.
They don't yeah. exist.
They don't exist anymore.
When I was first saying it, I was going to say, what's the name of that band that has like a weird one-word name? And I'm glad I thought of it.
They had a big moment. And OAR were I think, formed at Ohio State.
Okay.
I think they're all Ohio State. So it's like, yeah, it's like that makes sense, right? You know, it's like the most kind of, it's just digestible. I don't know. It just was never my thing. But also like everything I was into was like the opposite of that. And I viewed what I was into as like, so much more edgy and, you know,
it is. It's punk. Like it is. It objectively is. And punk is so political.
Sure.
As my ex-boyfriend explained to me.
Like, yes, I'm glad. Explained. Yeah.
So
I'm glad
just,
you got that.
So
yeah.
it's just better, you know. And what's interesting is like, I never saw the Indigo Girls or I have yet
okay.
to see the Indigo Girls play live. They played yeah. at Sundance this year and I'm so mad I didn't get to see them. But Ani DiFranco was my first concert, and that makes sense off the yeah. yes, off the back yes. of the Indigo Girls, and then Counting Crows. Like I saw okay. so many Counting Crows concerts. Crows. I was like inspelled by them, in, like yes. all through college, etc. So yeah, that's sort of where I was hanging out, and that all makes sense to me. That all fits in a bucket for me. So yeah.
I think so. I loved Counting Crows too, but I will say, you know, I was not as into. As I said, I was not as into Indigo Girls as a kid, but my friend and I were in the car and we started doing karaoke, which is karaoke in your car, to Galileo. And I started crying. Like I was tearing up. That is such a good song. I mean, when we sing it, it's not as good as when Indigo Girls are singing it. But then I started listening to them more from the karaoke. And I'm like, obviously they've been successful for such a long time. They continue to have such a huge, you know, like people just love them. They are so great. You know, I'm glad I came around to it. I think if I had listened to it more as a kid, because that's what I, in the same way that I, and I'm not, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of bands like this, but the thing that I always loved about Tori Amos and Sarah McLachlan was just how emotionally, like, you know, those songs just really made you feel so much. And I feel like Indigo Girls are so incredible. And I'm like excited to listen to more of them, even after doing this podcast with you.
It's like poetic. And it's like, and then they have all these like Galileo, especially like all these like references to like history or literature.
And you're getting
or whatever,
those. I'm like not, but you're getting those.
these like hidden treasures that are in all their songs. It's like really fun. So yeah, and I think also there is this relationship we have with whatever that band was yes. at that time, where like, especially before we had smartphones and stuff like that, like if you're by yourself in your room or whatever, the relationship you have to the music that's playing, whether I can't listen to music and read anymore, but that used to be like my favorite activity, or to like draw and listen to music. I'm not a good artist, but I used to do it. Like that sort of passive, just existing with yeah. an album like over and over again on the CD player and the tape deck or whatever it is. And I know that sounds like, that makes you sound so elderly to be like, you know, we really understood music back then, but you just had a different relationship. I think it was just more, I don't know, because like I am so interested now in how yeah. people absorb music. I'm so interested now in how music is made. Like I've been like following the progression of like how TikTok especially has impacted the music industry, and how like hook forward songs or songs that are almost entirely hook, because you can get people into the hook on a TikTok video and then you just like put forward the song and the song is like 80% hook and like little verses in between. So and like people are just like listening to a song, they like not an album. So like, you know, they're not listening to the deeper cuts and like all this sort of stuff. So it's just a different relationship. But I guess I'm not saying better or worse, but I am saying different. And there is a there was a feeling when you put your head like if you had your like Discman and put your headphones on and you're just like in a world with that sound. Yeah, it matters so much, especially that those teenage years when you're so vulnerable to whatever you're feeling, you know?
Yeah. And there's a neurological reasons for it also. Like I have a, not trying to brag, I have a master's degree in clinical mental health counseling.
Jonah. And, excuse us.
And, you know, I did a paper on this book called This Is Your Brain on Music. And it talks a lot about, you know, at that age when you're kind of forming like synapses and connections in your brain, that's why music is so like the stuff you heard during that era, you will never have as much of a relationship with stuff you're hearing as an adult because it's like you're forming these connections. It has such a huge impact on you. And it's another reason why as an adult, we don't generally get into like new genres of music or that kind of stuff. Like it's sort of is more set, but like, and we want to go back to that stuff a lot, but it's harder for us to get into newer stuff, I guess.
It's like trying to learn a language as an adult.
Exactly. Exactly. I was like, way tougher.
It used to be something I was good at. And I was like, my whole life, it will be so easy for me to learn languages. And then at a certain age, it was like, nope, not anymore.
Yeah. Now it's
that's good to know. Cause I bet if I try, I always think that about myself and I bet I would be really bad right now learning it. But also I was going to say, it's so interesting. We were talking recently on a podcast about Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet. There was a popular TV show, which we won't talk about, but they used a song from that soundtrack and
illegal to use that song.
Well, I'm like, they're going to use this song already. Like this movie just came, everyone knows this from the, and then Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet is from 1996. Yeah. So it's been 27 years, but I'm still like, no, but excuse me.
But that's all, I know exactly but also, what you're talking about. I was like, that song was too iconic to that moment in that movie.
Yeah.
That I was like, it is illegal to use. This is forever belongs to that movie.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I was in shock. I was like, how dare they? But then I also was like, it almost took me out of a show that I absolutely love, but I won't talk, we can't promote. Again, I'm striking. We're all in SAG and WGA striking, but I couldn't believe they used it. And again, I hear our side of it of like, how dare, but also I'm like, it has been almost 30 years. So
totally. I just think it's not like everything on the Romeo plus Juliet soundtrack is off limits, but I think that song is, do you know? And it's just sort of like, there's certain movie moments where like you can, if you want to, but I'm just sort of like, why would you possibly put up what you're doing in competition to this thing that has such a place in pop culture, you know?
It really, I didn't know how to feel. I felt such a mix of emotions, but that was my first thought. And I was like, what is happening?
Yeah. Vanessa, you probably know this. Do you know my first cassette was a movie soundtrack?
Oh, 100%. And I thought I still had it.
Really?
What is it?
It's an iconic cassette. Do you want me to tell you what it was?
Wait, can I guess? Can I ask questions?
Oh, I would love that. Joanna, I almost had you guess. And then I was like, I love guessing games so much. Oh my God. I was with my friend Claudia yesterday and I was making her guess something. And she was like, I have a migraine. Can you just tell me? And I was like, fine.
Rather someone guess than me just tell them. All right. So which decade is it from?
So this is from the 88.
Oh, no.
That's really specific info you gave, John.
Very specific.
And I would say it's iconic in that, okay, I won't give you any more.
Yeah, I would say it's iconic.
There's like several songs on it that are iconic.
Okay. I thought you were just like, it's a soundtrack with several songs
It's not all original material, I don't think.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Would you put it on like the list of like top 20
No.
movie soundtracks of all time?
No, I don't think it's really niche. Heralded as an iconic soundtrack. I mean, it had a couple hits on it, I will say. I don't think it's like a super credible one.
It's funny because we could give you either the artists of the, I would say there's two major hits on it.
Yeah.
We could give you the artists. We could give you the names of the songs even. And I wonder if you could guess what the soundtrack is.
Let's do that.
Okay. Don't Worry, Be Happy by
Bobby McFerrin.
Bobby McFerrin.
Bobby McFerrin.
And Kokomo by the Beach Boys.
Oh, Cocktail.
Yes.
Okay.
Cocktail.
Great.
And yeah, not all original. There's an Elvis Presley song on it that I believe is not specific for the soundtrack.
I don't think I knew that Don't Worry Be Happy was from Cocktail, but Kokomo definitely.
I wish
Kokomo
we just
definitely.
Left it at that, because yeah. I think it would have been really hard for you.
I was listening to the radio the other day, and Don't Worry Be Happy came on, and I was like, this song is awesome.
Oh, it rules.
It's so good.
That happened to me sometime in the last few months. I heard it, and I was like, this song is so great. And he has such a great sense of humor. Like,
so
kind
warm,
of his comedic timing. Yeah. And yeah, he's so sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a great song. Yeah. Those were the two big hits off it. And then there were like, it was kind of more kind of oldies. Like I said, there's an Elvis song. Tutti Frutti was on it.
Because this is right after or reasonably close to Dirty Dancing and the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Sure.
With all the oldies on it was like so major.
Yeah, just like the Everly Brothers.
Yeah. And a lot of people would probably say that soundtrack was a little better known than the Cocktail soundtrack.
Just, no, but just like marginally. I think it's like number one Dirty Dancing, number two Cocktail.
Yeah.
Yes. Cocktails and Dreams. Two follow-up questions.
Sure.
Number one, how old were you when you found out that Kokomo was not a real place?
That's such a good question. I definitely remember looking it up probably sort of recently, but definitely as an adult. It took a long time. I always assumed it was a real place. Yeah.
Vanessa?
I think as an adult within the past, I think it's been since we started doing this podcast that I looked it up for something, because Jonah once did a report to Kokomo where he gave a speech with Kokomo playing in the background as a part of like a book report or something.
Yeah, I think I've blocked this out.
I remember him rehearsing it. I remember him rehearsing it with our parents. Anyway, I'm sure it went great, Jonah. But anyway, I think because of that, I was looking it up for this podcast. So as an adult, Joanna, how old were you?
It was like last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fair. That's understandable.
It was like last year. And I can't remember why it came up. I think we were just talking about, I pride myself on being able to rattle off various islands because of the song Kokomo. I can go through them, and I just thought
Kokomo
was one of them.
Yeah. They put real
like Aruba,
islands
Jamaica
in there.
Are real places.
Yeah.
Why is Kokomo not? Second question. Okay. Is Cocktail an important film to you, or is it one of those anomalies where, like, because I have some of these where you pick up the soundtrack and the soundtrack is important to you, and you've like, I've seen the film once or something like that.
Purely soundtrack, I think I've seen, I don't even know if I've seen it all the way through. I think I've seen parts on TV. I remember being very impressed by some of the flair bartending moves.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Cruise is like, you know who does his own cocktail stunts? Me. Tom Cruise.
But that's kind of the extent of it. I couldn't, the movie did not have as much of an impact on me personally.
Do you remember the City of Angels soundtrack?
Yes.
Which had like the Goo Goo Dolls on it, and Peter Gabriel, and U2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like all this stuff. And it was just like, every song on there is an absolute banger. I've seen that movie twice, I think. But like, I own the soundtrack and I loved it so much. So
yes.
Oh, I was thinking it was City of Angels, but it's the Bon Jovi song Always was supposed to be on Romeo is Bleeding. And that's why it starts with him saying, this Romeo is bleeding, but you can't see his blood. But then Bon Jovi saw Romeo is Bleeding and he was like,
nah,
this movie sucks. And then someone told him to release the song a couple years later, and then we got that iconic video, etc. But
that's really funny.
I thought it was City of Angels for a second. I was like, oh, you know, I have never seen it, but you know, Bon Jovi hates it. But it's actually a different movie that Bon Jovi hates.
No, City of Angels is film where Nick Cage is an angel, and he just has to give up his angelhood because Meg Ryan is just irresistible. And how can he stay an angel when he could become mortal again and be with Meg Ryan and know what a parrot is like? So there you go.
Vanessa, I don't know if you knew this. I did a fiction workshop in college with the guy who wrote the book that inspired Field of Dreams.
I don't think I did know that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great story. I think it's like, is it like a novella? It's like, it's really.
Yeah.
I've read it. Yeah.
He's passed away, but he was like, his thing was kind of baseball fiction.
Yeah.
And I remember having these kind of, like, he was friends with Richard Brautigan, who's this really interesting guy.
Oh,
and
Brautigan.
I had like a week of like stuff where he would like read our writing when we were like in college. And yeah. I don't know. But yeah, I think his big claim to fame was that his book was made into Field of Dreams.
I think that story, is called something like Shoeless Joe Jackson and the
something like that.
Yeah.
Wow, you guys know so much stuff.
But I don't know anyone who's on General Hospital currently.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yes.
That's right. And yeah. I know a lot of the characters.
You know them all. And this writer, his name was W.P. Kinsella. He was a really nice guy. So yeah, so I think that's really, I think we've really covered Indigo Girls.
Indigo Girls.
We sure did.
Yeah, I might have to check them out. Like I said, never really visit them, but I think maybe it's time.
1200 Curfews is what I would suggest. Because again, it like sort of acts as a greatest hits, and you get their sort of like live persona, etc.
Yeah.
I think that's the most I've ever talked about the Indigo Girls, okay, despite them being so important to me. So thank you for that opportunity.
You're welcome. It's interesting because sometimes you think a live album as more of like a B-side or, you know, more of like a hardcore fan thing. But you're saying it's a good intro in this case as well.
I think so. I mean, I think some more obscure stuff is on there.
Uh-huh.
But then like, you know, Galileo's on there. Closer to Fine is on, like the best from their albums before 95 are on there. And so like Power of Two, like, yeah, all the like really good ones are on there. And then there's stuff after, like, as you say, they've been working since, but you know, a lot of their later stuff doesn't really hit for me the same way. But again, probably it's because my brain is no longer soft and spongy, and it is all hardened and formed, in my opinion. So,
This is like, and again, we're going to take a break, but you know, this is so common, right? Like when I talk to people about their favorite records and stuff, it's usually like the first album you heard by a band. Like that's the one, especially when you heard it that era, that's the one that makes the most impact. It's not necessarily their best one, but for you it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Joanna Robinson.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, and we're back. So, Joanna, now we'd like to play a little game with you called Change.Dork.
Change.Dork?
Otherwise known as Let's Make Fun of People Who Don't Know How to Use Change.org. So in this game, we're going to bring up three different kind of nostalgic petitions that people have made on change.org, and we'll read each one of them, and then we'll decide at the end which one we would sign if we had to sign one of these nostalgic petitions. That's what we'll do.
Excellent.
Sounds good. Vanessa, why don't you kick us off?
Okay. We wanted to make them sort of TV adjacent because you're such a TV expert. Okay.
Okay.
This is sort of a TV edition. You're very welcome, Joanna. This first one is called Ban Liberty Mutual Commercials. For the sake of all that is good and holy, please take back our mental bandwidth 30 seconds at a time by removing all marketing and advertising from Liberty Mutual until they can stop pumping out these meta-ironic, toxic loads of nonsensical drivel. This would involve the wholesale removal of all of those involved, from the decision makers to the flaccid yes men and women along the way. This person's kind of writing like you, Jonah. Marketing managers, and they list a bunch of people, blah, blah, blah. And they, oh, this person also says, surely we can find productive and non-creative roles for them in society of the people who created the commercial. So this, like a human doorstep, sign spinner, writing for SNL, etc. Okay, so this person is not into SNL either. Okay. Yike. Also, I'd like to call for the public execution star of the musical savant that penned their jingle. I think this pretty much speaks for itself. Again, help us restore the blend of good entertainment, blah, 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 and advertising that panders to the lowest common denominator like Liberty Mutual.
Does this count as an ad read for Liberty Mutual?
I know, right? Is this just like a very like underhanded advertisement? I don't know. Jonah, what do you think about this petition? What do you think about these commercials? Do you have strong feelings as this person apparently does?
Okay, again, I don't want to give free advertising to Liberty Mutual, sure. But like,
yeah.
Is there jingle like Liberty, Liberty, Liberty?
Yeah.
Okay, so I know the jingle. I don't know that I could like identify a Liberty Mutual commercial. What happens in them that is so offensive?
I think it's because you don't watch as much General Hospital as I do. They're on... When you watch like a network show, I think they're on quite a bit.
What happens in them? Like, what's a plot of a Liberty Mutual commercial?
It says something about an emu, so I think that's in them a lot.
Is it like on the level of like a Geico commercial or something like that? Where like...
Wait a second. I know every... Isn't the Liberty Mutual commercials where like... Are they the ones where people are like standing on a dock?
Yes. They're like sitting on a bench by the water a lot.
They'll have like different characters on a dock. Like it'll be someone... who's like dressed in a phone that gets splashed with water and then they jump into like a thing of rice.
I've never seen a Liberty Mutual commercial.
Our producer Becca is saying there's some sort of gag talking in front of a green screen statue of Liberty.
It sort of is like this idea of like, yeah, they're sort of like low budget, but also sort of like winking at you. Like, isn't this like ironic or something? There is that. I think they're very kind of self-referential or very like... conscious of how it's coming across.
Okay, listen, they sound annoying.
Yeah.
And no points for the lyric work on their jingle, though points for stickiness, because I know it somehow. But I don't know that I'm going to call for the public execution of these people involved.
I know. This person put asterisks and at the bottom wrote, or at least a public shaming.
Okay, so
I need to hear what else is on the list, but thus far, I don't know. How do you feel about Liberty Mutual commercials?
Personally, I don't have like really strong. This person's very strong feelings. I think a public shaming is a lot. These people are just doing their jobs. I don't know. They're not my favorite commercials, but I don't really like any commercials.
Vanessa? So,
Vanessa, what do you think?
I'm a real, I'd say, commercial fanatic.
Mm. Yes.
And so I'm surprised that it took me a second to remember exactly what these are because I was getting them mixed up with another commercial. But anyway, I will say when they come on, I know the jingle does get a little stuck in your head. And it's not like my favorite jingle, although if they ever wanted me to do the commercial, I'd be so happy to do that. And I hope, you know, but the point is, I just want to say that the song is a little rough for me. Okay. And so it's not my favorite commercial. I think the fact that it is stuck in all of our heads a little bit, and by all of our heads, I mean me and Joanna's head, I think that's enough to say like they're doing their job.
Yeah.
Like they're doing a good job.
Sure.
A jingle has a stick. Though, do you remember, speaking of nostalgia, do you remember the Big Red commercials, the gum commercials?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Those were like cinema. Like it was like Americana cinema, where it's just sort of like, it was like Norman Rockwell set to a really catchy song where it would just be like a marching band and he's late to the marching band because he's kissing his girl or like whatever, you know, like everyone's just kissing because Big Red gum makes your breath so great. So all you want to do is like kiss. And it was just sort of like adorable, like smooching to like fun songs. And I was just thinking about those the other day.
Yes. Joanna, you know what you're making me think about, and you know who really nailed the idea of the ironic commercial was Mentos, for sure.
Yeah,
I knew you were going to say that because I was just thinking of that too.
Yeah.
And then the Foo Fighters brought them to a whole nother level. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, I follow some of those like Instagram pages that are 80s or 90s theme, nostalgia theme.
Yeah.
And someone was writing about how every 80s movie has a Mentos section in it. And they showed the section of Back to the Future where he's like on the, he's like on a skateboard. And he's like running away from the mean guys.
And then he gives it to the kid at the end.
Yeah.
It was just
the same sensibility.
Yeah. Same sensibility.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like what would be great would be if Liberty Mutual would kind of up their game and match that level of cinematography. But
yeah,
you know, maybe that's the petition that we'd prefer.
I mean, maybe they should take all the money they saved on not using any word other than Liberty in their jingle.
and
put it towards,
yes,
you know, yeah, a set deck, something like that.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Probably into that.
Jonah, do you want to read this next petition?
Yeah. This one's called Remove the TV from the S6 Commons. This is from UTS. This is a school. I don't know what school it is or where it is, but it says the current layout of the common area is not working for majority of S6S. The TV and couches afforded to the gamers of the grade are taking up a third of the commons, while the only spacing used by a tenth of the grade, size constraints, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we don't need to get super into the details, but it says, I would like to propose a removal of the TV in our commons. The sonic pollution caused by a literally vocal minority in that room during the crowded times disturbs everyone, whether studying, sitting down, or having a conversation at normal volume or gaming. Others in our commons should be treated with respect. Despite the maturity one would expect from people of this age group, it appears some of our peers have not yet learned how to use their indoor voices. I'm absolutely sure that I'm not the only one experiencing such symptoms, so please let me know if you require further consultation or TV removal. I'll be happy to help in any way I can. So, yeah, basically this person is trying to get the TV removed from their common area because it's too loud.
Point of order question, though.
Sure.
Are the gamers gaming with the volume on their games? Do you know what I mean? This is not answered here. You have no way of knowing, but my question is like, what's the difference between noise coming from a game, or do they play those on silent? By the way, when I was growing up, my mom made us play video games on no audio. Oh. We could listen to music.
Okay.
But she was like, no Mario Brothers sounds. I don't want to hear it.
At first I was like groaned when I heard that, but now I'm like, that's actually kind of smart, because when you're jumping over coins, it's really mind numbing.
Yeah.
I will say that I don't know, but I will say that this person uses the term gamers in quotations, which I think is kind of like a passive aggressive way, you know.
I'm surprised that in an area where people are studying, there is like a section for gamers.
Yeah.
And a TV. Like when I was in the dorms in college, we had a common room. It was quite small. Nobody ever studied in there. There was like other places to study, and there was a TV, but no one ever really watched TV in there. Like you play video games, or like maybe occasionally people watch movies, but like no one was like, Alias is on, I have to go watch it or something like that. So I mean, and I will say this, in college, it was only in the dorms my freshman year, but I didn't really watch TV. It's like the only year in my life I didn't really watch TV at all. And I think that's kind of cool. So actually, I'm kind of pro removing the television from the common room, because I think you should just like be with your pals. Also, it's so different now. Everyone has their own like screen in their room. So like,
Right. You know, this makes me think of when I was in college, I think it was the year 2000, I don't know if you know this, I was in school in Ithaca College, and bands would come through and I would like set up concerts for them. And I set up a concert at Ithaca College in one of the dorms, like in the common area, while kids were like trying to study who lived there. And I remember the elevator was broke. It was this band, The Q and Not You, who are kind of like a well-known band. They're this kind of post-hardcore band in the early 2000s. And they played in this dorm, like in the lounge study area, and kids were complaining. And I was like, whatever, you know, what's wrong with you guys? We're having like all these great bands play in your dorm. You should be so happy. And like, no one cared. And I can't believe it didn't get shut down. But so.
Did you ask someone if you could?
No, I just set it up and it the whole show happened. I don't remember if I ever got permission, but it's like when you're that age, you just do stuff. And it turned, but
I don't think I just did stuff.
Well, I don't know. I was just like, well, this is a place.
Yeah.
And I think I was in I don't even know if I lived in that dorm.
Did you pay them?
Yeah. I mean, we charged like $5 probably or something. I had my own band open, you know, it was a good show for us.
sorry. What was your band called?
My band at that time, I believe, was called Mumra from the Thundercats character.
There was a band in my college called Humble Rat, which was like a Modest Mouse sort of.
Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
Nice. Yeah.
Humble Rat
is pretty good. So as someone who would set up loud concerts in a common room, to me, TV seems like no big deal.
Right.
But I also think it would be probably frustrating if you're trying to study and someone's, you know, being really loud, especially if it's not a lot of kids. I get it, but it also feels like this is a very niche petition. Maybe change.org isn't the right place for it. Maybe administration is. Vanessa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it seems like a tough move. I'm just thinking about sort of like the social implications, and I don't, you know, I want this person to speak their mind, do their thing. But that having been said, to go on to change.org to start a petition, just maybe talk to the people who are doing it, or even go to like the head of the dorm and say, like, can we make hours for studying and hours for gaming? Like,
yeah,
it just feels like this is, by the way, we forgot to say how many signatures the first petition had, but this one has 35 signatures.
35. So not bad. Seems, I think this petition suffers from a problem that a lot of these petitions have, where it tries to sound overly formal to make it sound like kind of more professional, but it ends up being like, it's a little too much. Despite the maturity that one would expect from people of this age group, it appears somewhere like it's a little too much.
I would not be friends with this person.
Yeah.
I think it's tough.
By the way, so UTS appears to be University of Toronto Schools. So this is like Canadian, and that just puts a whole different
spin
on it for me. Anyway, like I sympathize with wanting to remove the TV out of there. I do not. I think going on, this is real like elderly neighbor energy. And so like ostensibly this is a college student, and I'm like, live your life, my guy.
Yeah.
Or lady, but probably a guy. Like, you know, just
it
just,
is a guy.
Yeah, like, it's gonna be okay. You know?
Yeah, fair enough. Vanessa, you want to get into the last one?
Sure. I don't want to give any spoilers, but kind of thrilled about this one. Make Sky Rizzi's Nothing Is Everything a complete song. Sky Rizzi's Nothing Is Everything is an uplifting song that the world needs during such times like these. It's only 20 to 30 seconds long, but it's so catchy it needs to be 4 minutes. Doing so can bring awareness and great publicity to the drug itself. It will also bring smiles to people who need it desperately. Click to hear the song now. As you can see, the song isn't long and it has the narrator's voice over it. We are requesting a full standalone song with the same singer and band. It is possible to implement this during COVID, and it's a melody that can calm a lot of people. I currently have a medical problem I am dealing with. This song has made me happy and helped me to live with more hope. Oh my gosh. If you like the song, don't hesitate to sign the petition. Let's do this today. Now, before I ask either of you what you think of this, I want to come clean on something, which is that my friend Jenny Binstock and I are obsessed with this song. I've looked for it on Spotify many times. And since this person wrote this petition, or maybe this was already happening when they wrote it, they haven't come out with the full song, but they've done like a country version. They've done more of like a hip hop version. They've done a ton of different versions of the song, but have yet to come out with the complete song without a narrator talking over it. So I'll wait to give my opinion on this. But Joanna, what do you think?
Sky Rizzi is a prescription medication, right? Like that's what this ad is for.
Yeah. Do you want me to sing the song really quickly?
I do.
This is the hook.
If I knew it by heart, I would want you to sing it.
Okay. It goes like this. Nothing is everything. And then this is the way it starts. It goes like this. It goes, things are getting clearer. Yeah, I feel free to be myself. Yeah, that's on me. Nothing and me go hand in hand. Nothing on my skin, that's my new plan. Nothing is everything. And then there's like a rething where they go, nothing is everything. Nothing is everything. Jenny and I sing it all the time.
Okay, can I just say that like, I am not personally emotionally invested in any of these change.org petitions. However, if it will allow you, Vanessa, to sing karaoke to Nothing Is Everything, I would gladly sign this petition.
That's so nice, Joanna.
I'm pretty giving, you know, in this theoretical change.org petition instance. What do you think, Jonah?
This one's tough for me. I don't know the song. It doesn't really sound like my kind of vibe.
But what if they did a punk version?
They did a punk version? Maybe.
Nothing is Everything is kind of punk. Like
that is, yeah. It is pretty nihilistic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess if there is a petition, you know, there's got to be some kind of scene for this. It probably does come from a real song. I don't know. I do agree. Like, if we give Vanessa a lot of enjoyment, that is interesting.
Thank you.
I will say, as a music listener myself, and some would say professional music listener, it's not exactly my vibe.
Can I just say that, like, when you Google Nothing is Everything commercial.
Yeah.
What commercial says Nothing is Everything? Who sings the Sky Rizzy commercial song? But then also, who is the model in the Sky Rizzy commercial? I want to know how many people are Googling that. Who's that? Who's that person in the prescription medication commercial? Yeah, if I'm citing any of these, it's definitely the third one. And just
okay,
to make it
okay, thank you.
Jonah, I have one more question for you. You know, something I used to do a lot related to music that was kind of snobby was, like, people would be like, I'd be like, oh, what do you think of this record? And they'd be like, oh, I really like it. I'd be like, yeah, I don't like it, but what do I know? I just write about music professionally. Do you ever do that with TV where someone's like, oh, I really don't like the show? And you're like, well, I think it's great. And actually, like, I do all these famous podcasts about TV, but what do I know? You're probably right. I mean, do you work again?
I do the opposite, actually.
Okay. I don't do that, like, now, by the way. Yeah, I don't do that now. Yeah, this is just, you know.
I have friends who ask me, like, what do you think of this show? Again, we're not talking any specifics now because we support the unions, but, like, what do you think of this show or this movie or whatever?
Sure.
And if I hated it, I feel so uncomfortable saying that because, you know, if they've liked it, because I don't want to yuck their yum. I'm like, if you liked a thing, I think that's great. I don't want you to think that I'm coming at with you with the force of, like, I do this for a living. However, I will say there was one time where an ex-friend of mine's terrible husband was arguing with me about, I know, great, good, perfect storm of people, was arguing with me about this show, Constantine, which had been canceled. And I knew it had been canceled because guess what? I do this for a living. And he argued with me for hours about this. And I was like, I just don't understand. You work on cars, which is great.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
But it's not your...
I would never tell you a thing about a car. This is literally my job. Please believe me when I tell you a show has been canceled. Why would I lie about it? Why would I be insistent about it if I didn't absolutely know it was true? So sorry for that random anecdote, but I was
exactly what I mean. Yeah. And I think I was doing it a little bit funny, but I also think I was kind of a snob. But yeah, this is what it's making me kind of think about. Vanessa, what are your thoughts? I think we all know how you feel about the Sky Rizzy song.
Well, first of all, I want to say I don't really do that with comedy, even though you didn't ask me, Jonah, but the only person I really do that with is you.
Okay.
Because, like, if you make a joke, I'll be like, leave the comedy to your sis.
Yeah, it's, and other people have said that to me if I post something on Twitter and they're like, good try, Jonah, leave the comedy to your sis. And it's pretty much a recipe for me not to ever want to be your friend.
I would,
because it's with Vanessa, it's funny, but when someone else says sometimes I'm just like, all right, I'm not trying to be a professional comedian, but
but I would love to go to a comedy show with you, Vanessa, and just, like, have you heckle the comedian the whole time and just be like, what do I know? I was only on Saturday Night Live. Like,
just yell at them from the audience.
Like, just recurring the same phrase over and again. But what do I know? I was on SNL.
That's going to be my new catchphrase.
But what do I know? Right.
That's right. Well, okay. Of these three petitions, which, by the way, I think this one has 135 signatures.
All right, so kind
of, how many of those signatures are yours, Vanessa?
Jonah.
And how many are Jenny's?
Yeah, and how many are Jenny's?
probably 80, 60 to 80. I just want to say something. Not only is obviously the third one what I would sign, but I want to give you guys some insight into the song just really quickly. Sky Rizzy is a prescription medicine used to treat adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. So what they're saying with Nothing is Everything is, and that's what I said, I'm saying you the lyric that goes, nothing on the skin, that's my new plan. So they're saying having clear skin, so nothing on their skin.
Right, would be everything to them.
Would be everything.
Got it,
so
got it.
So not only is it, you know, a hook, a great hook, but also it's smart. It's like nothing is everything. It's like they were probably writing and they go, how do we say this? Like, what do we put together? And they go, oh yeah, nothing is everything. That's the jam.
Can I tell you that I did not know this song. The name of the drug meant nothing to me. But when you said moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, I was like, no, I've definitely heard these commercials.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, that I have heard a million times.
Yes, it was probably because this really catchy song was playing and they were saying for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Yeah. And you like that, like caught
and
your
I was
brain
like, nothing
more
is everything, right? Like something like that. Okay, great.
So all of us,
yeah, I'll go with it too. Yeah, why not? I mean, it's like, it's removing a TV from a place I'll never go or a commercial I don't feel strongly about. So we'll go with this one.
Yeah. And this is also the most positive one too.
Sure.
It's like, it's not shaming anyone. It's just saying, give us more of this.
It doesn't have that kind of snarky vibe either where it's like, these geniuses are, you know.
Yeah.
These people should be pilloried in the town square or
right.
These college students you'd think they'd be more mature than they're acting.
Yeah. And I mean, this person is very dramatic in their petition where they say, this song has made me happy and helped me to live with more hope.
Yeah. So that, So it's dramatic, convincing. But not condescending.
Yeah, but.
Exactly.
And
And
a self-expression, right?
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not speaking for everyone. And folks, that's how you write a petition.
Okay.
You put your heart into it.
Yep.
Okay, you might get 135 signatures. You might get more.
Okay, Joanna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was so fun. Where can people find you?
Where can people find
you? Do you have anything to promote?
I have a book coming out in October about Marvel Studios called MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios. It's about the history, like the... from its inception to its current, like, questionable moment of, like, you know, we interviewed everyone and it's this whole history of Marvel. So that's coming out on October 10th.
Okay, great.
You can pre-order it now if you want to. I'm on social media at Joe Wrote This everywhere. And then on The Ringer at The Ringerverse, Prestige TV, Travel Content.
Okay, and I just have to say, if you are... you know, obviously keep listening to our podcast, please. But if you're looking for another podcast, listening to Joanna talk about any show is so much fun.
That's so kind. You've always been so very nice to me. I mean, I should return the favor. Like, you both are so delightful. Thank you so much for having me here. Obviously, Vanessa, like, I've watched you for years and years and years and years. So, like, it means... tremendous amount. And Joan, I've met your cat now, so we are bonded for life. So thank you for having
me. This is true.
So nice.
Yeah.
Well, we love you, Joanna. We'd love to have you back sometime. And thank you to everyone for listening. And if you enjoyed this, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we'll discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones like the Indigo Girls.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.